Welcome to the Scariest Things Podcast, episode number 5, where we are your gateway to horror films, where we talk the trends and tropes of the genre. I'm your host, Eric Lee, and I am with...
Mike Campbell!
And so this week...
Number 5. Eric, can you believe we made it to 5 podcasts?
It's commitment, baby.
That was our goal. Goal was 5. Like, if we can eke out 5, it might actually be a real thing. And here it is.
And I'd like to thank...
Lucky number 5.
Also, I think we can thank Alex Vollmer and Six Strings Recess for our new intro music.
Which is badass.
Yeah, baby.
If you like that chugga-chugga guitar sound... You will love the new intro. You just heard the new intro, so you do love it, because that's why you're here.
So this episode, we're going to talk about our top 4 zombie flicks.
Yes.
And boy, howdy, do we love ourselves some zombies.
Who doesn't love zombies?
So I think, you know...
Zombies might be getting a little long in the tooth in 2017 going into 2018, but... Mm-hmm. You know, they've done us well over the years.
I think there's, you know, the genre, trying to figure out what makes the zombie movie so popular. And I've got some notions about this.
Lay it on me.
You know, I think, you know, first off, setting the ground rules for the zombie movie. Sure. So normally zombie movies are about undead, the dead coming back to life.
Right.
But I think the there are a number of related movies that I am also including when I'm thinking about my top 4 zombie movies.
Mm-hmm.
About the people who are being changed into brainless, violent cannibals.
Right.
I think the cannibalism is a key ingredient.
Crazies fits.
Yeah, yeah.
Zombievers fits. Because the beavers the beavers are crazy and mindless.
So they don't have to be people.
They don't have to be people. They can be beavers. That's totally legit.
So, you know, I think that the idea of the zombie movie has morphed. And I think that through our discussion, we'll identify certain movies that established the baseline rules. You know, I think the movies, particularly the Romero movies, mm-hmm. and The Walking Dead, I think they extend the idea of the zombie movie into something, a sociological statement about the decay of civilization.
One major allegory.
Yes.
It's race relations, it's the Vietnam War, it's commercialism, the compression of economic wealth in the United States.
And a lot of this stuff. The zombies are sort of the boundaries of the civilization.
Right.
And I think that it whittles society down to a select few survivors, usually.
Yep.
And that these zombies are the context. They're not necessarily... They are the dangerous thing. They actually are what we go to see the movie for. But oftentimes the zombies aren't necessarily the most dangerous thing out there. They are the fences that keep people contained, and then they have to deal with each other and rethink how humanity deals with each other.
Yeah.
So...
Let me ask you the most important question.
Yeah.
The question that everybody wants to know. Fast or slow? Should the zombies be fast or slow, or do you not care? Option 3.
I think my top 4 movies probably has 2 of each.
Ooh, interesting.
Too fast, too slow.
Let me see. I'm going to look here really fast. Fast, slow, medium, slow. So I guess you can't have both.
Right.
You can't have both. I will say, if you put a gun to my head, and if I was undead,
mm-hmm.
and you were forced to kill me, I would go slow zombie.
Well,
I would go slow.
And here's the thing is, I think most directors go slow zombie because, let's face it, one of the reasons why there is a proliferation of zombie movies, they are cheap to make.
That's right.
And the acting chops for the zombie horde is shuffle.
That's right.
Everybody can do their own zombie imitation as long as you don't have to do... Michael Jackson's Thriller dance.
That's right.
You're going to be in okay shape.
That's right.
I think there's a whole cottage industry about how to do cheap prosthetics.
Right.
I think Tom Savini and who's the
which
the,
we'll be getting to later in this podcast. So I have a feeling.
Yeah, and who's the guy, the special effects guy for The Walking Dead, who's made a you know, all
the guy with the beard.
Yeah,
he's got a beard.
Yeah, okay, well, anyways,
it's a gorgeous beard.
Gorgeous beard guy.
Gorgeous beard guy.
But I think that they have told people how to make really effective prosthetics that look to make so you get the shuffle, you get some cheap prosthetics, and the gore is pretty easy.
Yeah.
So I think it, but it also leads to there. For every one good zombie movie, there's five terrible zombie movies.
I'm gonna go 10.
Yeah,
ten terrible
zombie movies. I did a check on zombie movies before we did this, and I think that the list is like hundreds.
Yeah.
And of which maybe 30 to 40 of them are watchable.
Yeah. I think much like your quintessential horror rule, which is you have to care about the protagonist.
Right.
My number one zombie rule is you have to be able to put yourself into the situation.
Absolutely. Right?
Like, so if you're watching the film going and asking yourself the quintessential question, not fast, slow, but what would I do? Yeah. What would I grab? Why would I go down that hall as opposed to that hall? If you're asking yourself that question when you're watching the film, it's probably a pretty good zombie film.
And I think, you know, to relate to episode 4's podcast, which was talking about...
which is a great episode, so check it out. Good stuff.
Also available.
Also available.
For your listening now.
Yes.
That Max Brooks' World War Z book.
Mm-hmm.
And his zombie survival guide.
Right.
Are tremendous in actually putting you actually into that... What are the rules? And some of my favorite ones that Max has is, if you have a two-story house, which I do, take out your first story so the zombies can't climb up and get you. You know, and the whole thing of don't, it's like, guns are great, but you run out of ammo, so it's good to have a nice, durable weapon that can do in a zombie at close range. And, you know, wear pads, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Go get yourself an ice axe.
So, but the
get an ice axe. Zombie need an
movies,
ice axe.
Everybody has, in fact, actually,
yes.
One of my favorite things about the whole zombie genre,
yeah.
is that the CDC, mm-hmm. our government has latched onto. They have a zombie survival guide.
Right.
Tongue in cheek. Because it actually, a lot of the things that you need to survive the zombie apocalypse are also the kinds of things that you need to survive, say, a massive earthquake,
mm-hmm.
or, say, a hurricane aftermath. And so, for the good people of Florida and Houston, if you actually had done some serious zombie prep, you probably held out okay.
That's right.
Compared to your neighbors.
Study up on the zombies. Which is also, I don't want to belabor this point, but, you know, that's the really great thing about the treatment of the government in... zombie films, it's both, the government is always viewed as both a gift and a curse, mm-hmm. right? It's mm-hmm. like, it's oftentimes the origin of the plague,
right?
In the case of many zombie films, and it's oftentimes, you know, those people that ultimately come to your rescue.
They are the safe haven.
They are the safe haven.
But I think
it is the gift and the curse.
Not on my list, but one of my favorite, zombie origin stories is Revenge of the Living Dead.
Yes.
With the doofuses in the basement, and they have the coffins that are...
Yep.
The military... The guy showing off, and he busts open one of the coffins, and the gas leaks out. It's like...
You're right.
That's my... That, of all the zombie movies... Dumb movie!
Did it make your list?
It did not make my list. It would have been... It's in my top... Actually, it's in the top 10.
It was so close.
Yeah. I had a real hard time.
I would say one of the best... It was one of the best... punk rock soundtracks of all time. It's got 45 Grave on it. It's got TSOL. Good stuff. Good stuff on that soundtrack.
It also gives you the whole idea. It's like when you think of zombies and if they say one word, what do they say?
Brains.
So.
And what do vegan zombies say, Eric? vegan zombies say... Grains. Okay, sorry.
I shouldn't have laughed.
Yes, yeah, that was terrible. Small was transgression. Terrible. Small transgression. Yeah. I apologize.
And I guess the one last point that I was going to make about zombie movies is I think for I think one of the appealing things is that full-scale zombie slaughter, and I think this is where Walking Dead plays out to right. becoming so popular in a lot of contexts, is that it's killing with impunity. Killing a zombie isn't like killing a person.
Right.
Right? And so you don't have that. It's not as dark as if you kill the zombies. The zombie, again, is the context.
Right.
And it's keeping the danger away. And right. and it's kind of like the superhero movies where you have hordes of mindless automatons and you can dispatch them. But the neat thing with the zombies is you can blow their limbs off and it gets gross and messy.
There's definitely some Freudian subtext going on here.
Yes. So with that,
Eric loves to kill. That's the
killing with impunity.
Killing with impunity.
So to start our death list off,
yes,
Mike, what is your number four?
As Eric mentioned, there are hundreds of zombie movies. You know, 30 years ago, there was like 20 zombie movies.
There's a big gap between Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead. I think that's that was one of the things I did check.
And if you go for like if you go from White Zombie and some of the stuff from the 20s and 30s to now, I mean, yeah, zombies were not on
the scene until Romero.
No, it is a crazy leap. I'm going to go with the 2016 Korean masterpiece Train to Busan. This is a modern allegory to like the pressures and tensions that we're facing with Korea, but it's basically the story of an apocalypse that occurs in real time on a train. And it's no more complicated than that. These are, of course, super fast. This is my super fast zombies.
These might be the fastest of the zombies.
These might be the fastest of all the zombies. The great thing about this is that it's got a really wide set of characters. It's mm-hmm. like you're reading a Solzhenitsyn novel, but you get a good sense for there's so many characters. That's my point. Okay. Not that it's like a Solzhenitsyn level literature. But there's so many characters. But the thing that's great about it is you get a really good character development for each of the characters. Yeah. Now, granted, there is a ton of schmaltz in this movie, so I'll warn our viewers out there that haven't watched it. There is a lot of schmaltz.
It's not a heavy zombie movie.
It's not super heavy, although
it has a heavy ending.
It has a heavy ending. But the thing that's great about it is that it's really kind of gets down to. Again, it's as Eric has said in kind of his opening, it's less about the zombies and it's more about like how you're relating to other people. And in this case, it's about a torn family. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about a little girl traveling with her dad. They're estranged from the mom, or the dad is estranged divorced from the mom. And so you're immediately rooting for the little girl and the dad, but along the way,
the people who help them out.
There's people who help them out, but there's people who are completely repugnant in the film, and of course they get it, which is satisfying. They should get it, and it's very satisfying. And that's the cliche part of the film is that which is sort of a gift and a curse as well. Is that really good character development, but also pretty cliche in a lot of ways.
I think there was some predictability of who's going when.
Yeah,
there's going to be multiple noble sacrifices.
There's no real shockers in terms of who gets it and who survives. There's a great ending scene, which I think I don't know this for certain because I didn't study up on it, but I think it's probably an allegory to the original Night of the Living Dead, where they're walking out of the.
Right.
I don't want to spoil it, but there's a scene at the end of the film where they're walking out of this tunnel, and the military is there again to try to help, to stave off the zombie hordes, and something happens. That's all I'm going to say on that. But
I think this film almost made my list.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they handled the fast zombies piling on top of each other. I thought this was better than World War Z, which had similar kinds of things.
Right.
World War Z looked like it was, you could tell, a lot of computer-generated stuff.
Right.
It was powerful at times, the World War Z stuff. But this one, where you see them get themselves, the pile of zombies wedge themselves into a door because they're all convening at the same time,
mm-hmm.
clambering over each other, knocking down glass partitions and whatnot, it's powerful. It is adrenaline hopped up.
Oh yeah,
stuff. That Train to Busan is great. Yeah. I loved it.
No, good film. All right, what do you got for your number four on the death list?
My number four is similar to Mike's. Is that it is a it's a foreign film.
Ooh,
this is I like it. 2007 by, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher the name, but Jaime Balagueró.
Jaime Balagueró.
And the movie's Wreck.
Oh, yeah. Good. So we watched that together. We watched that together.
We watched the remake. The American remake of this is Quarantine.
Yeah.
Which is also a good... I think they...
Pretty solid.
It's note for note Wreck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
And a solid interpretation. I give the credit, though, to Wreck because it came out first.
Yep.
I'd say that they are relatively equal films, but I like... I think that Wreck... For originality and actually, I think the exoticness of actually being in Barcelona rather than Los Angeles, like Quarantine is
right.
I think I'm not a huge fan of shaky cam and found footage stuff, but I think this is one of the best at the found footage shaky cam.
Mm-hmm.
It gives a rationale because what we do is we follow a. It's a TV show. It's a news crew that is it's sort of
doing
like
profile of the fire department.
Like Nightline, yeah. They're doing a ride along. The fire department gets a call
or hard copy for those of you who remember hard copy.
Dateline.
Dateline NBC.
So
to catch a predator,
and you know, so Dateline gets called to check out someone who's gotten sick in an apartment complex, and lo and behold, they've gotten the zombie plague. And
now the origin of the zombie plague is cray cray.
Yeah,
is bizarro.
Yeah, it's not. I think this is less about. This does not give you. It's not. It doesn't give you that satisfying story like Revenge of the Living Dead. Hits you the straight notes on that one. But I think what this does is it gives you the. This is a haunted house. It's a combination. So you got the haunted house, intense claustrophobia.
Nobody trusts each other,
and there's
but they need to
because they're quarantined, and
right.
Thus the second the American remake that the government has shut them out, and these folks the survivors have to find a way out,
right?
And those who try and get out too early get gunned down.
Yep.
So it's and yet you're trapped in a house full of infected apartment dwellers. It's got that the anxiety builds up in a hurry. I mean, this thing. Another thing about zombie movies. I don't think there are very very few slow burn zombie movies. Zombie movies are zombie movies from the get.
Right
as you step through the first act, there's usually a setup, and then the zombies come at you in waves and waves and waves.
Right.
This one, it's unlike say Train to Busan, which is the whole city of Seoul is
gone
zombie. This is just the apartment building, but they're gonna jump. That it's like every door, every attic crawl space is a potential zombie spot.
There is no stop.
It has got
no stopping.
One of the best visual closings to a movie. They repeated actually in Quarantine.
Right.
Great use of the night vision and getting someone and they show it in the trailer, so it's not really a spoiler. But someone gets dragged away screaming.
Right.
At the very end, with a night cam on him.
Yep.
I thought it was great intensity to it. I think an interesting. I think the claustrophobia alone. I think this one really packed a punch.
I like it. I like
it. You're number three.
Number three is a film called Zombie. It's a film called Zombie 2.
Okay.
It's a classic. Yeah. It is a classic. It's in some ways kind of a dog, but in other ways it really it's this was originally meant as. The sequel to Dawn of the Dead, Leo Fulci and Romero were working together on this, and this was a 1979 film that was released in Italian as Zombie, Zombi, not the full zombie. It involves a Caribbean island that is cursed by voodoo. Its inhabitants are brought back to life, and it starts with there's a great scene in the early on in the film, and in the boat where there's a sort of a unidentified boat floating through the harbor in New York, and the police come
And the police and a journalist come and discover the zombie on the boat. They trace the boat back to the owner's daughter, and then that's of course traced to the Caribbean island. It's not the best film out there.
This is Mr. Campbell and I are going to have a big disagreement about this movie.
It's not the best film. There is a scene where the zombie fights with a shark, which is just pure awesomeness.
Oh no,
pure awesomeness. But you know what's great about the film is that it really holds true to all of the trappings of zombie.
This is more of the voodoo dead coming up, and it's not the
sure.
the there's not this contagion that spreads.
Well, yeah, you don't know. I mean, that's that they kind of leave that they leave that a little ambiguous. And I think the thing I like about it is that
I think the very end of the movie alludes to that it's
a contagion.
A contagion.
Yeah.
But
yeah, because there's a great scene at the end where the zombies are advancing on the Brooklyn Bridge, and New York is under siege.
Although I think the goofy thing for that,
yeah,
is that normal traffic and zombies walking across the Brooklyn Bridge. So what is clear is that Leo Fulci managed to clear the top deck of the Brooklyn Bridge for filming, but they weren't going to shut down the rest of the bridge because this movie.
He only had so much money.
Right.
He only had so much money. No, yeah. Zombies are fun. It's a fun movie. It's a classic. I think it's largely regarded by a lot of people as, you know, they may not put it in their top four, but they would definitely put it in their top 20.
All right. Well, we'll be hearing about this later.
Again, if they put a gun to their heads.
Right.
All right. Number three for Eric. What do you got?
It was a coin toss here.
Okay.
Between the two great zombie comedies.
Ah.
I went with Shaun of the Dead.
Just watched it on Friday. True story.
You can watch this over and over and over again. I think
there's always something different in this film. Right. It's like watching Repo Man. Every time you watch it, there is something different. And I swear to God, I watch it and I go, did I even watch this film the first time?
Yeah. Well, see, and the other film, much like this, that I had to pick and choose. It was Shaun of the Dead or Zombieland.
Right.
Which
Shaun of the Dead, far superior.
Yeah, and in the end,
in my humble opinion, yeah,
I think Shaun of the Dead, the wit in Shaun of the Dead, it's a wonderful setup of the zombie tropes, right? Edgar Wright, for those of you who don't know, if you're listening to this podcast, pretty assuredly you've seen Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Made a star out of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, right? I mean, this is the American introduction to these actors. And the chemistry between those two guys is so good.
Yeah,
it is. And the whole fact that the we're going to survive this thing by hanging out at the Winchester and drinking the night away until
this based
thing
on the premise over. That there is a gun that is hanging
above the bar.
Well,
and I guess that makes sense.
And they assume that there is ammunition associated with said gun.
This is Britain,
where there are no guns.
Right. So, you know, My favorite parts with Shaun of the Dead is there's another, I got a lot of them, but
oh yeah,
you know, the casual ignoring of zombie behavior in public as the movie starts out, where it's like the zombies who press against the window and they just think that's like some homeless git,
right?
It's like back off. the passing of the mirror crews, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
where it's like. Hello, hey, how you doing? Where there's the doppelgangers for each of the Simon Pegg's crew has their mirror opposite as they pass each other, which was brilliant. Just a little small touch.
Yep.
Of course, the flinging of the LP records, which I think is a Mike Campbell special. Mike Campbell, by the way, has a couple thousand articles of vinyl LP.
Yes. Get rid of the Dire Straits.
Yeah, there was the Dire Straits. Batman soundtrack.
Get rid of the Batman soundtrack and Dire Straits.
Right, but I think they held on to.
I think it was the Smiths. Maybe the Smiths. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Strange Ways or something like that. And then the mother Barbara has the best line. Very British upper crust kind of things, like where Sean asks Barbara. Mom, are you okay? And she goes, yes, I'm okay. But they got Philip. And it's like, what do you mean? It's like, well, they're a bit bitey, which is perfect dry British humor. The descendants of Monty Python and Peter Sellers. This is great.
And there's also the other thing that's great about that is that I don't know if you caught it. I always forget this line is in there when they show up to Barbara's house and they say they're here to get you, Barbara. which is a great homage to the original Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
Yeah.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
They're coming to get you. All right. No, that is a good one.
It's like, and
that
it's not,
solid.
It's not just for laughs. There's pretty gross, grisly, gory bits, particularly when David gets it.
Right.
And he had it coming.
Yep.
And perhaps the best use of the classic zombie trope, act like a zombie and trick him.
That's
where
right.
Where you just do we were just talking about this in the preamble about how it doesn't take a great actor to pretend that you're a zombie, and this is the crew shuffling towards the Winchesters and acting like zombies, which was, I loved that. So,
good
anyways.
Stuff. Good stuff.
Your
number two. I'm going a little off the beaten path here. I'm going with the 19, and I guess there was some comedic elements to this as well. Now that I think of it, but the 2006 film Slither.
Oh,
a small town.
You think it's a zombie movie?
Well, a small town. It's overtaken by an alien plague. Right?
Okay, yeah. Okay.
And the residents are turned into zombies.
I love Slither.
And all forms of mutant monster. The cast is crazy. It's got Nathan Fillion. It's got Elizabeth Banks. It's got Michael Rooker.
Michael Rooker.
It's even got Pam from The Office. It's got Rob Zombie is in it. Jenna Fisher, a.k.a. Pam, is in it. She plays a very small role. I think it was early on in The Office. Mm-hmm. It's just a super fun movie involving a meteorite hitting this small town and this extraterrestrial parasite where the aliens sort of invade people's bodies and control their bodies. It's really fun.
Starts with a slug.
It's got some David Cronenberg elements to it. It's pretty gross. It does have one of the craziest, weirdest, super goriest.
The barn?
Endings. Yeah.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah, the
barn. Yeah, there's a barn. There's a scene in the barn.
With the girl who blimped out.
Yeah.
Oh, that was rough.
And it's just, yeah.
And at the same time, you can't, you're laughing and you're kind of cringing.
You're laughing, you're crying, you're cringing. You can't, you don't know how, your mind can't process it. But it's a really great movie, and it ultimately meets my number one zombie rule, which is like putting yourself into mm-hmm. that. Now, granted, I have not been involved with any alien parasite meteorite incidents, but what it does do is it kind of forces you to think, okay, I'm living in a small town. What would I do? How do I interact with the local sheriff? How do I interact with the local townspeople? But the thing that's great about it too is as they develop all the characters, you see sort of all the parochial infighting amongst all the different people in the community, and you know, who knows who and who knows the mayor and who knows the police chief and all that. And it's a fun movie. I think this one did not do well at the box office. It's become a cult classic.
We may see a Slither 2, but I think that it had, this was another case of, I think this is sort of the slightly more than minimal budget
right.
horror movie that probably need, I, my guess is, it, I mean, if you look it up on IMDb, I bet you it cost $10 million to make.
Right.
And so it's got to make, it would have had to have made $30 million to turn a profit.
Right.
Which I think, you know, certain
save your money.
Yeah.
Oh, $15.5 million to make.
So
and it grossed $7.7 million. So that's terrible.
That's too bad.
Slither, you could have done better.
It should have done better. It is. I think if we wanted to start a campaign to get Slither a sequel,
yeah,
go rent it.
Yes, go so rent it.
It is a lot of fun.
Check it out. There might even be a VHS copy floating around somewhere.
No, it'll be a DVD copy at this
right.
point.
Yeah. All right, number two.
Well,
what do you got?
This may be number one on Mike's list.
Uh-oh.
We'll see.
That's okay.
This is because I have to go, because I have to include George Romero.
Yeah.
So I have, so you're picking and choosing And so this was another tough call, Dawn of the Dead or Night of the Living Dead. I went Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah! Best movie ever. Not just best zombie movie, best movie ever.
When there is no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
That is my number one. It is my number one. I will. Yep. I will disclose.
So we can discuss this one together.
Yes.
So, but this is, and I think we touched on this earlier. Is that this is 10 years after Night of the Living Dead. So this is 1968 to 1978.
Right. Yep.
So this has got. So he had the benefit of also having done Martin.
Yep.
And Crazies. The Crazies. So yep. So Romero had built up some goodwill with Hollywood. This was still a fairly inexpensive film, but this is better acted. It's a more expansive take on Night of the Living Dead. Now, granted, the thing is, Night of the Living Dead is sort of the progenitor of all this stuff.
Right.
But I think that Dawn of the Dead is a better movie, and that's what it came down to for me.
Yeah.
So you know, I also appreciated that it was brilliantly executed in full gross out color.
Yep.
The mark against it.
Is
that the zombie makeup? The zombie makeup was clearly blue paint.
Yeah. if you ever do get a chance, if you get the full DVD set, there's a documentary, and then there's Document of the Dead, and there's all sorts of documentary film on Dawn of the Dead. But essentially, they were making this film at night. The mall would close up. They were allowed to go into the Monroeville Mall at like 10 o'clock at night. Right. They had to be out of there by 5 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. So they would go to the local bars. They would grab people out of their bar stools, slap blue paint on them, give them some blood, and they were off to the races. So, it's somewhat almost kind of guerrilla-type filmmaking.
Well, they did. I think this is that tradition is now taken on, and I remembered the guy's name from Walking Dead. It's Greg Nicotero.
Greg Nicotero, awesome beard, super awesome beard.
But they have learned the art of prepping hundreds of extras for zombie movies.
All thanks to Tom Savini.
But let's be
super clear about that.
Yeah, that Savini is the master, and okay. he also. Then Romero, this was the first time that we got the sociology. Well, Night of the Living Dead was
an allegory.
Race relations and that kind
and
of stuff.
Vietnam.
And Vietnam.
Yeah.
This one was Romero's take on commercialism, using the shopping mall. In fact, they even have the observations like, why are they still here? It's like, because this is what they're hardwired to do this. That they come to something that they recognize. And they would have just like... There would be a guy in a Hare Krishna outfit shuffling around, and the stunts, like the highlighted zombies, and they're just shuffling around as if they're in the mall, shuffling around. Like it was a wicked fun satire on that. And there was some other great satire bits, like the rednecks out in the field picking them off. It's like, I got one.
Yeah.
It's like, hold on, you missed him. Yeah. And that was. That whole bit was also just like, it was only like a minute and a half, but it also spoke volumes about the way it's like America and its gun culture also.
Yep.
So another sort of sociological take.
And unlike Slither, which did terrible at the box office, Dawn of the Dead cost about $650,000 to make. Yeah. It has grossed now over $55 million. Yeah.
And I think it's beloved. I mean, this shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody.
You don't need a lot of money to make a horror film.
Yeah, or particularly a zombie movie. I mean, and I think this is also why, you know, the slow shuffling zombies. If you want to make a budget movie, you don't need to do sped up high speed zombies like Train to Busan or World War Z. You can do this and it's just getting mobbed. I think now the remake by Zack Snyder,
which we might get to later on in the podcast.
We might?
Yeah.
Okay. Because that is I thought a brilliant take on it.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. I think there were more characters. I think the characters in the Zack Snyder remake, I think there were probably they were better known actors, Ving Rhames and Sarah Pauley, I think.
Yeah, yep.
Better fleshed out. but I think that, you know, Dawn of the Dead meets Eric's number one rule. Do you care about what happens to the protagonists?
Right.
I think your core group of the two cops and the reporter,
yep.
and the chopper pilot,
yep.
You're attached to them. Even they're boring when they get when they're just going through their routines of wandering the mall and just trying to keep some normalcy to their lives before the biker gang hits.
I put myself into every single one of those scenes for sure.
And I think it's led to last week we talked about the properties, and it's like never has been a good video game about done about a movie, but there or a movie done about a video game.
Right.
There have been a lot of good video games based on Dawn of the Dead.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
The shopping mall. There's a game called Dead Rising where you cannibalize things from the shopping mall. You take a chainsaw and a blowtorch and a beach ball or a teddy bear and you make them into things. And all of that stuff and it's so much fun. And you go around the shopping mall and just chop zombies up. That trope will go forever.
Yeah,
I think in the American consciousness.
The one thing I will say about Dawn of the Dead is I think the thing that really hooked me is the opening sequence of the film, because it's set in a TV studio. They're desperately trying to get information about what's going on. Nobody has information. There's complete paranoia and hysteria.
Yeah.
And it's so incredible. The dialogue is real.
Yeah.
The foundation for the whole film is so tangible, and you could see how people would go to news media first thing, not fake media. You would see how people would go to news media in the event of a zombie outbreak and just hope that these people who are equally as hapless as you would have something to tell you.
But they don't. I think the close ties to what you take out the zombie part of it. This is a pandemic.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I think and spoiler alert: Mr. Campbell here is a communications director for a government agency that, and so there's limited information, and then you have to be able to communicate with people about things that are hard to process.
Right.
And my sister also does public health stuff in Seattle. And, these are the things that I think that you have to prepare for the, oddly enough, the zombie outbreak in terms of something of getting sick and people just like imagine if Ebola hit Cincinnati. And then what is like, what would you do? And what is the communication like? And how does it get quarantined?
Yep.
Anyways,
yep.
So that's
great. Film.
That's my number two.
Great film. And
pushed out.
I will say, we could probably do a whole hour on Dawn of the Dead. I will say, watch, there's a U.S. release, there's a European release, and then I think there's an extended European release or an extended U.S. release. I can't remember which it is. All three of them are great. Some of them are darker than others. I won't go into why, because that's kind of it's a major spoiler. But all versions of Dawn of the Dead are just exceptional. Yeah. Okay, number one.
Okay, so that because my number one.
Yes,
and I this shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody because it was in our first podcast.
Yes. Yes.
2002, 28 Days Later by Danny Boyle.
Bring it on.
So this is, I think. And the reason why, and this is, it was a tough decision for me to push out Dawn of the Dead because I love Dawn of the Dead so much. But 28 Days Later, the characters are so good.
Yeah.
So Jim.
I would put Dawn of the Dead, I would go number five, Dawn of the Dead. Okay. Or, I'm sorry, 28 Days Later, yeah. Number five. That was a close call.
So Naomi Harris, Brendan Gleeson, and the little girl, Megan Burns, plays Hannah. They're all excellent in their roles as survivors.
Yeah.
And I think... once again, we're going to tap back into Michael's commentary before about the military and how it plays into zombie movies and how often that they are the point of both the origin and or the safe haven. In this case, it's unclear as to where. No, actually, it's explicitly clear as to what happened.
Yes,
this is a rage virus,
right?
That a bunch of PETA people foolishly unleashed upon London.
Darn you, PETA.
Damned hippies. but the military is thought of as the place of refuge, and it turns out to be as horrifying, if not worse, a bunch of violent, rape-crazed soldiers or zombies, take your pick.
Yep.
And so the third act of the movie has so much tension because it's like overlapping layers of danger. And in order to spare, to save themselves, they have to, in another well-tried horror trope, release an infected soldier to take him out. I've talked about 28 Days Later at length on our first podcast.
Go listen to episode number one. It's good.
So check that out. I think it is a
agreed. It's a
fantastic, great character driven horror movie and beautifully shot.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, great Michael, film. Great film. No, so my number one was Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, okay.
I think we covered it well.
All right.
I think we covered it well. Yeah. Dawn of the Dead, as I said before, doesn't matter which version you're watching, they're all great. I recently saw a 35mm print of it. It was absolutely beautiful.
Did you got into the Hollywood?
Yeah.
It was good
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, no, it was 35mm, the thing that I was.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it doesn't matter what version you watch of it. You watch an old VHS copy, a Betamax, a DVD, you stream it, whatever it is. It's a great film, so go watch it. So we come to that part of the podcast where we uncover the dead and undead. Eric, did you stick with a zombie theme for the dead and undead?
I did, but I'll let you go first and go with your undead pick.
My dead pick. I'm going dead first. Okay. This is the film to stay away from that should stay dead. This is the 1981 classic that I wanted to like so much but couldn't, The Beyond. Lucio Fulci. It involves a young woman who inherits an old hotel in New Orleans.
Yeah, we saw this together.
And all of these supernatural incidents start to occur, and it turns out that it was built over I didn't know there was more than one entrance to hell, but it was built over one of the entrances to hell. Great premise. Great idea.
Oh, this movie.
There's even some eye stabby stuff, which that's his go-to is the stabbing with the eyes. But pretty long in the tooth and pretty damn boring. And it results in an end scene that doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. And I already told you guys, go see, or go check out Lucio Fulci's Zombie 2. And I'm probably totally contradicting myself and being somewhat hypocritical here. But The Beyond, I couldn't go for. So what do you got?
I'll go my deadpan. Deadpan for deadpan. And I'm actually going to Lucio Fulci. Zombie Man.
Yeah.
It is not a good movie. I know this is.
Unless you want to see a shark fight a zombie, then.
Oh, the thing is, I think they actually hurt the shark. That's the problem.
Granted,
it was a big tiger shark. Yeah. If I was a diver, I would not get in the water with. Because sometimes when you'll see movies that involve sharks, there's like nurse sharks or a blue shark or something that's really not going to tear you limb from limb. They were in the tank with a tiger shark.
Right.
But they also, I saw it bleed, and I was like, this is in the age before CG. It's like, and the Italians are terrible at this, folks. The Italians will hurt animals for movies.
Yes.
So,
which we'll be covering in a later podcast.
Yes. Cannibal Ferox.
Yeah.
I think
the zombie that fights the shark. I don't want to spend too much on sharks fighting zombies, but he actually looks like Frankenstein.
He's terrible looking. He doesn't look like any of the other zombies. He doesn't. And it's the other thing is that there's this Caribbean bent to the zombies. So a lot of the zombies who pop up look like they're of Afro-Caribbean descent. The guy in the water does not look like it doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense.
The acting was
terrible. The gore was. I was looking. I watched this in preparation for this. And I was like, I went, this is bad. This is like. And granted, there was a bunch of gratuitous TNA. The people who end up getting killed off freeze. Nobody runs. Nobody screams. They see a zombie come up out of the ground slowly, and then they get lunched. Or they get right. they get bitten once.
We will be covering Zombie 2 in a full hour-long podcast here in the future.
All right. So your undead pick.
My undead pick, which we, again, kind of got to a little earlier. The Zack Snyder 2004 remake of Dawn of the Dead. Boy, when I first heard that this was going to be remade, I think it was like, I want to say 2002-ish, 2003-ish.
Trepidation.
I said, hell no. This is sacrosanct. You do not touch Dawn of the Dead. You don't ruin this film. And I went into that film with the lowest possible expectations, and I came out. I mean, the remake of Dawn of the Dead almost made my top four list. It is such a great film, and what I was talking about earlier, where you set the stage, where you have mm-hmm. the foundation mm-hmm. for. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a corny intro with this Johnny Cash song that doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense.
But the thing is, put into the role. I mean, that opening sequence where Sarah Polley and her husband and their daughter comes in. And then what would you do?
And then the car, and then driving the car down the road a million miles an hour, and there's this great aerial shot while they pull back, and car crashes into a gas station explodes. You really get this sense for, this is it. The world is actually
zombie
ending.
Apocalypse.
This is zombie apocalypse, done so well. They play on kind of the modern mall. They play on... all sorts of different facets of
the pregnant woman with
Pregnant woman. There's some race questions that are bandied about in the film.
But it was adapted to a contemporary. I thought they did a brilliant job of bringing it up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
I think they all
and these are fast zombies. These are not the slow ones. These are the fast ones.
And it was plenty gross. It lived up to the it held its own relative to the original. Still, it beats it, but not by as much as you would think.
No. All right. So what do you got?
Okay, so I'm
what is your
away.
Pick for the week?
It's not a zombie
the undead.
Movie. I actually went with another little British film that was out of 2011. This was John Boyega's big outing. This is Attack the Block.
Yeah.
And which is...
Cool film.
It's a lot of fun because it's a slice of London that you don't see very often. This is sort of the... The projects in London, and I will admit it's almost like listening to a foreign language film because their Cockney accents are so thick.
Yep.
Getting through it, but you know, Nick Frost is in this. But this was one when you watch this, you go, this kid Boyega is gonna be something, and yeah, now he is. Yep. But the aliens are fun. They're these kind of jaggy, furry, glowing beastie monsters. It's not particularly scary,
sure,
but it has that alien invasion kind of thing. Little, and just seeing the scrappy kids. And I think in the same way that I think you that like where it has you get the kids and you
yep.
and you're really rooting for them and how
there's a youthful exuberance.
There's a genius that comes out of kids' brains.
There's a coming of age. Because the kids are not boxed in or trapped by sort of adult thinking.
Right. So yeah, you get sort of. This is also kind of a stoner horror movie.
Sure.
A lot of dope growers. But anyways, I thought this was one that I think got a little overlooked. And for those of you who might be Star Wars fans and want to see what Boyega did when he was younger, go check out Attack the Block.
Yep. All right. So thanks for joining us this week. And until next week, don't go into the shed in the backyard. Because you might have to mow the lawn or something.
And that was just chores are the worst.
Chores suck. All right. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.